The philosophy of transhumanism is seen everywhere today. What is transhumanism, and how will the all-encompassing transhumanist worldview impact people in the 21st century? My interview with noted researcher and transhumanist scholar Carl Teichman is next here on the Soaring Eagle Radio Show.
Remember that your failure to be informed does not make me a wacko.
The time has come, the walrus said, to talk of other things. Of shoes and chips and sealing wax and cabbages and kings.
My mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do. It's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Nine most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
It's called the American Dream because you have to be asleep to believe it.
Welcome to Soaring Eagle Radio. Your host is Mike Spaulding. Get ready to be challenged and encouraged as you consider today's news and Mike's commentary from a biblical perspective. Now, let's join Mike.
Modern philosophy of transhumanism was formulated perhaps most clearly by Max Moore in his early 1990 essay entitled Transhumanism Toward a Futuristic Philosophy. Moore stated that, and I quote, transhumanism is a class of philosophies that seek to guide us toward a post-human condition, end quote. That's a very short and succinct definition of transhumanism. Most transhumanists are atheist or agnostic because the guiding principles that Moore spoke of are scientific, naturalistic, and humanistic. As such, they are generally anti-theistic and stand in opposition to an orthodox biblical Christianity. Here to discuss transhumanism and its many manifestations is Carl Teichrib. Welcome to the Soaring Eagle Radio Show, Carl.
Hey, Mike, it's a pleasure to be with you today.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. I've looked forward to this conversation for a long time, Carl. I have appreciated your research. I've utilized it, in fact, in my own studies and writings for quite some time. I've mapped out a very ambitious conversation today that I shared with you earlier, but I know that we're not going to get through it all. There's no way that we can say everything there is to say on the subject of transhumanism, but that only means that we'll have to continue our conversation in parts 2, 3, 4, and 5, right?
Absolutely.
So, Carl, let's start off with a definition of transhumanism for our readers. If you were going to bring up the topic of transhumanism at the office, water cooler or coffee pot, how would you describe it?
Well, you know, Mike, it's difficult to describe it without raising eyebrows, because no matter which direction you take it, people will be a little skeptical or they may be very interested and go, I want to know more. Probably the easiest way to say it is future human evolution. Let me rephrase that, directed future human evolution.
Yeah.
And that's the important part to understand, and that's why transhumanism has this appeal to it, is that now that we are able to do so much more with the technologies that we have, with nanotechnology, with advanced computing, the list goes on of incredible technological breakthroughs that we've seen in the last little while. In fact, even today I was looking at a news source on bizarre as it sounds, there's been an appeal to try to do a human head transplant. And you're going, this is breaking through barriers of ethics. And so many strange scientific stories are coming out, but they're not even really strange anymore. And so there's this time period that we've entered into where our technology is so advanced beyond anything our grandparents or our parents really could have understood. And we are now entering that period of time when the technology intersects with an ideology and a spirituality. And the belief is that now through our science and through our technology, we can direct, we can manage, and we can shape future human evolution and become more than what we are. We can become the post-human, the transhuman.
That is mind-boggling, to take all of that in and then to break that apart into pieces and thoughts. I can understand why you would say people will look at you with glazed eyes like, what in the world are you talking about? And yet, here's what's surprising to me, Carl. Transhumanism, for those who are in tune with it, for those who are aware of it, for those who are advocates or adherents to it, to the philosophy and the worldview of transhumanism, there is an avalanche of literature that's been released, conventions and meetings and think tanks and groups all dedicated to transhumanist thought. And yet, for most people, the average American or the average Canadian, transhumanism is still flying under the radar.
Yes, it is. What I find interesting, though, is that in certain generations, you'll see that in more ways than others. I'll give you an example. Last fall, I gave a series of lectures to a Christian Bible college. It was a conservative Christian biblical institution. And I gave a series of lectures over the course of a week on secular pagan trends, looking at all kinds of different areas. And when I had my session on transhumanism, the one thing that immediately hit me, Mike, was this generation, which were all millennials, this generation of millennials, they immediately got it. In fact, eyes went big and people went, you know, this is what we're being preached to all the time in terms of our entertainment, Hollywood, movies, books, just the incredible apps and software that we have available to us. And so that generation, the millennial generation, they were excited by what I was saying because all of a sudden their eyes are open to the fact that their world and the world view that they hold is a tension, certainly a tension. And they realize that this is reality. Yeah, sure. Some of the ideas that are being expressed are very far out, at least in terms of especially the older way of thinking, the older generation, but the newer generation, the millennials, they understood it. They got it.
Yeah. So, Carl, you mentioned the millennial generation and that they got it immediately. How much of that awareness do you think, and I don't want to go too far out here on a limb, but I think there's some significant truth to this idea that the millennial generation, they've really been programmed to accept this kind of worldview, this kind of philosophy, through technology. What do you think of that idea?
Oh, yes. There's no question about it. The technology has shaped the worldview. Not necessarily that it's shaped it, but it has enabled it. It's enabled the worldview now to come into focus in practical ways. It's no longer just an ideology or a concept or a dream. Now there's tangible results that can be seen through the technology. And it's not that necessarily means it's going to come to its full fruition. I've told many people that look at the gadgetry, as interesting and as amazing as the gadgetry is, what really is of utmost importance is the worldview behind the use of that gadgetry. It's the worldview that is being shaped and in turn shaping our culture. And more even than simply what is the latest app or the latest software or the latest use of nanotechnology or advanced robotics.
Yes, yes. Well, speaking of worldview, a transhumanist worldview, let's dive off. Let's use that as our diving board into the first of several fronts or areas. Let's talk about the entertainment industry and how it presents a transhumanist worldview. What are some of Hollywood's offerings that we could point people to and say, hey, right here, this is an example of a transhumanist viewpoint, whether it's in movies or television or whatnot?
oh, you know, there's so many that you could point to, and so many in the last couple of years, but the one that's an older one, and it's an older one, but it still bears putting up on a pedestal in terms of the ultimate transhumanist worldview and how it is configured, and that is the movie Avatar. Avatar did something very special. It merged technology, transhumanism, mind uploading. It merged space exploration with the advancement of human enlightenment, all built around an economic philosophy of and that would almost be considered anti-capitalist, certainly anti-American. But there was a spiritual component too. Yes. And the spiritual component was, in the movie, you would connect into the mother. You connected into the mother tree. No surprise the use of the tree as a symbol in the movie. And you are uploading yourself, your consciousness, and in so doing, you're finding that you are in tune with the consciousness of the planet. You're all one. That is the ultimate message that came through the movie Avatar. What's interesting with that, Mike, is I've had many conversations with young people, including young Christians, who watched the movie Avatar and went, wow, great movie, love the movie, phenomenal special effects. And then they bring up the fact that, you know, yeah, you're right, it has great special effects, fantastic features. Did you know what you were being preached about? Or do you know what you're being preached with? You know?
That's right.
What was the message you were being given? Because you were being preached to.
Yes. And that was lost on them, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And all of a sudden they had to think. And then I had to replay for them some of the themes that came through it. And they're like, yeah. I never thought of that. So it's subtle. It's done in a way that feels good. What was kind of weird about Avatar, though, is after the movie, I was watching and monitoring a few forums, and some of the comments that came up from younger people, the millennial generation, some of the comments that came up in the forum I thought were very disturbing, and that was, they walked out of the movie theater, and they looked at the world, and the world looked so gray to them. It looked so depressing. They just would like to disappear and live in the world of the Avatar. I went, oh boy, that is, you've been psychologically set up to want this thing, this something that is beyond human, something beyond your mundane world. You want to be able to connect into the cosmic consciousness, to become one and have that feeling. Because there is a feeling that comes with it. And definitely there was a sense with many people that they longed for a different world after leaving the Avatar experience.
Yes, absolutely. That's a good summary, Carl. And it left people, I believe it left people questioning their own spirituality. If it didn't line up with the message that they heard, the feeling that they had, I think it had the effect of causing them to question their own spirituality. So Avatar is a recent one. One that I think of, and this is a dinosaur, but surprisingly, they're still making it. I don't know, maybe they're on movie 7 or 8 now, but Terminator.
Yes. And that gives you a dystopian view.
Yes.
You know, where it's not a good thing, and yet as the movies progress, there is a certainly emerging between now the good side of technology, or robots more sympathetic to the human cause. And so what started off with the very first Terminator movie, and yes, that's an old movie. That was back in the first one was, what, 82 or something?
Yes, 83? That sounds about right.
I remember watching it.
Yes.
You know, then it was like the evil future mechanical world. But as it progresses, you find that now there's a sympathetic blend that begins to take shape between the humans and the Terminators, especially the one that comes back to now save humanity from itself.
From itself.
Right.
Right.
From Skynet.
Yes. And you know, when that movie came out, Carl, most people's reaction to it was, man, that was great science fiction, but there's no way that could ever happen. And, but if you read today, a lot of the folks that are working on artificial intelligence and are working on brain upload. What is that technology?
Yes, brain computer interface.
Yes, brain computer interface. They very much believe that technology is moving at such a pace that in a very short period of time, machines or artificial intelligence will surpass human beings in their ability to create, even.
Right. What is interesting with brain-computer interfacing is it is an old technology. It's been around for a long time, 15 years, and probably more than that. But in terms of becoming something that is usable, marketable, that is something that is streamlined to the point where the average person can have access to it, we're on the cusp of a change where the market now is not just ready psychologically for it, but the product itself, the hardware and the software, is advanced to the point where I believe we've had now two or three annual neural gaming conferences taking a look at the potential and just we're just on the edge of a breakthrough to allow this technology to be put into your home. We're not talking about something far removed in the distant future. We're talking about something already that is in development at this point. Not just developed in the sense of can it work. It does work. It's been working for, like I said, 15 plus years, but now can we bring it down to the level of something that we can put in your house, something to connect you to your game system, to your computer system, what software is required. And there have been tremendous advances now in neuro computer interfacing. Yeah. And it's only going to go, it's only going to get bigger as this becomes more streamlined, more miniaturized, and far faster in its capability.
Yes. And for those of you who are not familiar, I would encourage you to do some research on this. The direction that this is going and that Carl is talking about is brain interfaces with computers is that you'll no longer have to make any movements on a console or instruments, but you'll just think the move and it happens.
Right. You wear a headset. The headset is either tethered with a USB or some other cabling system, or, and this is where it's moving towards, wireless. And that's already been proven. It's workable. Brown University already 2 years ago came up with a working model for brain computer interfacing done wirelessly. The big thing though, Mike, with this technology, and it comes up within even the gaming industry, because they're looking at this going, wow, we could create a reality, we could create an existence, a feeling, a connection, unlike anything before. And here's where it gets concerning. And it comes around something very simple, and like I said, the gaming industry itself recognizes this. We're going to be able to blend the distance between reality and virtual so much that we will not be able to tell what is real and what is virtual. The two will become far more blended. That's where things get a little weird.
Yes.
And you know, I've been in Second Life. I've been in virtual worlds now for a number of years. I've been in Second Life since 2009, and it's a virtual three-dimensional environment, literally a virtual world. And there's already an element where our virtual lives, whether it's Facebook or Twitter accounts or any of the other social aspects of our online existence, where that already has reputation. You have a persona through it. There is a reality based now in silicone. And so we're just going to see that accentuate. It'll just simply increase.
Wow. Yeah. Well, we touched on this, so I'd like to explore it a little bit more. Transhumanism as a philosophy, as a worldview, has a very distinct religious feel. And its adherents demonstrate a zeal for this, I'll just call it a religious viewpoint. In fact, there are many religious and spiritual organizations that enthusiastically support transhumanism. Can you tell us about some of those?
Oh, certainly. And it's important for people to understand that this was more a secular atheistic approach. In fact, 15 years ago, if you would have suggested transhumanism as a spiritual philosophy, I think you probably would have been laughed at, even within the transhumanist community, because at that point in time, it was almost strictly secularist in its approach. But in the last, 5 to 8 years, things have changed, and there has certainly been a shift towards understanding that transhumanism needs some type of a spiritual dimension to it. And with that, there has been the growth and the birth of religious transhumanist associations. One of those, and the best known one, the largest one, is the Mormon Transhumanist Association, which I've had a lot of contacts with. And the Mormon Transhumanist Association believes that transhumanism is, you could say, and I'm just saying this in a general sense, it is the way of demonstrating the reality of their theology, which is to become as God. And so this now becomes the technological definition and the technological means of becoming as God. We're doing it through our science and through technology. By the way, one thing I've appreciated with the Mormon Transhumanist Association is that they are willing to bring to their table critics, including atheist critics, Christian critics, myself, I was included in that, who are willing to come and offer an alternative, a counterpoint to their perspective, which is, number one, very rare even within Mormonism, which typically keeps away from criticisms and people who bring a critical perspective to the table. And the other thing that I find refreshing with it is it demonstrates that, at the very least with this group, they're willing to think through some of the tensions and the conflicts and the point of collision between their worldview and others, yeah. Which I give them credit for that. It certainly has raised some fascinating discussions. In 2013, I was invited to speak to their conference as a Christian critic of religious transhumanism. And so the Mormon Transhumanist Association is one religious element. There's Buddhist transhumanists. There's now a fledgling Christian Transhumanist Association. There are other religious entities that are now being birthed through transhumanism. The Terrasem movement is a trans religion. That's how they describe themselves. And it is a religion that is birthed through the transhumanist ideology and philosophy. It brings together with it Buddhist practices. It brings yoga. It brings meditation practices. It combines that with technological progress, and particularly with the development of online, creating almost like an online alternate of yourself, so that when your body physically dies, hopefully in 80 years or 60 years or maybe 5 years from now, we'll have the software and the capability for you to upload your personality into an avatar, into an artificial carrier, electronic artificial carrier. And you can now live on forever in this silicone world. But again, it's built, Mike, all around a religious perspective. And that's why they call it a trans religion. It literally is coming and linking so many various fields together and creating this new way or this new model of being religious.
Yes, yes. Freemasonry.
Oh my, yes. Freemasonry, again, where Freemasonry dovetails with this is, again, the ideology of perfection. We can perfect ourselves. And you know, Mike, this is where I guess the rubber hits the road. Whether it's transhumanism, or whether it is Freemasonry, or whether it is esoteric philosophy, the list goes on. You could put almost any label into this. All of it is built around the idea that man can perfect himself, that man can overcome death, that man can overcome limitations, that we can become something more. In fact, Freemasonry speaks quite heavily to that in their various philosophical works, all about the idea of pursuing the perfectibility of mankind.
Yes, that's right. Even mainline organizations like the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America, some of their theologians have begun to embrace this transhumanist worldview and to speak favorably of it. I was reading, and by the way, folks, those of you who are listening, if you're interested in reading more about Carl's experience with the Mormon transhumanist organization, I encourage you to look at his Forcing Change magazine, Volume 7, Issue 4. Volume 7, Issue 4. That was April 2013, where you're going to get a lot of this information. And to the point that we're talking about here, Carl, about the, it seems to be the natural bent of things that transhumanism is morphing into. It's keeping its guiding principles for sure, but it's morphing into this pseudo-religious organization, and I see that especially in cosmism.
Yes. I'm glad you brought up cosmism, because for most people, cosmism is unheard of, unless you live in Russia.
Yes, that's right.
even there, it may be beyond some people as well, because it is a religious ideology that is now being re-embraced by Russian millennials, but has kind of been under the surface with some Russian intellectuals for a long time. Cosmism was birthed at the turn of not this century, but the turn of the last century, with a gentleman by the name of Fedorov. And Fedorov, he merged together, and by the way, he wasn't anything really special. He wasn't a man of wealth. In fact, he was quite poor. He was a librarian. He wasn't a superstar, but he came up with an idea of birthing a new intellectual way of thinking, a new direction for humanity based on what he saw already at that time in terms of technological developments, especially with the advancement of transcontinental communication and transportation and all that went with it. And so he saw a time coming when man would be able to, through technology, go into space, to go to other worlds, to planets, to literally infuse the cosmos with human activity. And he did this by bridging Russian Orthodoxy, technology, evolution, and theosophy. He bridged esoteric ideas with Russian Orthodoxy, and in the process combined all of this in a way to demonstrate, one, the idea of mankind perfecting himself, and then two, being able to move out into the universe and literally to become almost godlike in our capability. And then you hear that quite often within the transhumanist community. In fact, this is an area that even the transhumanists have been wrestling with each other, because the wording that is often used is so religious. We are becoming gods, or we have a godlike capability. We are becoming divine. And the secularists in the transhumanist camp are going, hold it, this is religious. And the religious in the transhumanist camp are going, you're right, but you're being religious too. And so there's some fascinating debates that have been going on as the transhumanist movement is working to define themselves. First of all, with the understanding that, yes, it was secularist in its intent, but now the recognition is, hold it, it is becoming spiritual.
Yes, it very much is. Let me share a couple of quotes. And again, for our listeners, this is from Carl's Forcing Change magazine, Volume 7, Issue 4, dated April 2013. And this is a quote from Ben Gortzel, who's a transhuman and a cosmist thinker. He wrote a book called The Cosmist Manifesto, and this is what he had to say. He said, whether or not transhuman minds now exist in the universe, or have ever existed in the universe in the past, current evidence suggests it will be possible to create them, in effect, to build gods. As well as building gods, it may be possible to become gods. But this raises deep questions regarding how much or how fast a human mind can evolve. And then here's a quote from Lincoln Cannon, whom, Carl, I know that you know very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he, is he the gentleman that issued you an invitation to speak?
Yes, he is. He is the president of the Mormon Transhumanists.
Okay. So Lincoln Cannon, in his opening speech at the 2013 Mormon Transhumanist Association, said this, and this is a quote, "The Mormon Transhumanist Association stands for the proposition that we should learn to become gods," and that's capital G, I don't think that was a mistake, "should learn to become gods, and not just any kind of capital G God, not the capital G God that would raise itself above others, but rather the capital G God that would raise each other together. We should learn to become Christs, saviors for each other, consolers and healers as exemplified and invited by Jesus," end quote.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an overwhelming, there's an overwhelming amount of evidence that suggests that transhumanism is in fact morphing into a religious and spiritual movement, which has all kinds of implications.
Oh, it really does, Mike. And what's interesting is even those who are atheists in their orientation, when it comes to transhumanists, they're bending already their own language, their own words, now to almost fit within a religious construction. I'll give you an example. Ray Kurzweil, who's the director of Google Engineering, he is a noted atheist. He is a rock star in the transhumanist community. There's no question. Kurzweil is if there is a Mr. Transhumanist, he's it. In his book entitled The Singularity Is Near, which was published in 2005, this is what he says on page 390. "God is a word by which people mean different things. We can consider God to be the universe. The universe is not conscious yet, but it will be. Strictly speaking, we should say that very little of it is conscious today. But that will change, and soon. I expect that the universe will become sublimely intelligent," unquote.
Wow. Wow.
So even the secularists are using the same type of language, terminology, the verbiage. And Lincoln Cannon, who I consider a friend, we disagree, obviously. But nonetheless, he's treated me very respectfully, and I hope I have done the same for him. I find it interesting how he himself, he was the one who pointed me to this through one of his articles, saying, "Hey, look at even the secularists who in the transhumanist community are using God and religious terminology in their way of approaching this. This is a religiously constructed movement. If you really boil it down to its essence, the secularists, in the modernist viewpoint, secularism was going to rise and religions would fade away. It seems to be the opposite. Yes, we have the new atheists. We do have the new atheists, and there's a large upswell of atheism and agnosticism. But at the same time, we have seen an increase in religious interests and spirituality and religious pluralism. And here's the key. We have seen a huge surge in the ideology behind paganism, which says we are all one."
Yes, that's right.
That is really the dominant worldview at this point. It's not that we're entering the age of God is dead. We're entering the age where we say we are God.
We are God, yes. That's right. That's exactly right. So that's the religious aspect. Science, technology, they obviously played a very prominent role in advancing transhumanism. We already talked about nanotechnology, or at least touched on it. Neurotechnology, the brain-machine interfaces, we've touched on that. Many people point to the promise in engineered prosthetics as a promise, as a bright spot, highlighting the potential of transhumanism. And surely that is a good example of something that is good for humanity. But there's also a dark side to transhumanism, isn't there?
Yes, there is. And it is important that we do acknowledge that there is a bright side in some areas.
Yes.
You know, We're using technology right now, Mike. You and me, we're using technology that would have been unheard of 25, 30 years ago.
Yes.
You know, the gadgetry of the science fiction movies from the 1970s is now the landfill in our junkyards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point.
You know, I mean,
yeah, that's a great point.
We've gone remarkably past where some of the great visionaries of science fiction and futurism where they were thinking already, you know, two generations ago. So we've come a long way, and with that has come some real benefits, no doubt about it. At the same time, there is a Pandora's box that has been opened. We are using technology in the same kind of way as the tree of knowledge of good and evil. There is good there, and there is incredible evil that can come with it. And that is something that cannot be ignored, and there are some transhumanists who go, you know, we're opening up a can of worms here that we might not be able to put everything back in the box. And I've often said it's not so much the technology and the fruition of that technology in trying to create heaven on earth. I'm more concerned sometimes, besides just simply the spiritual component of it, I'm sometimes very concerned with what this technology looks like when it's put in the wrong hands. When we now all of a sudden run into a political crisis or a world crisis, we already have entered the age of the surveillance state in ways that we could not have fathomed just a generation ago. And so while we look at this as something that has some benefit, at the same time we do recognize, as Christians, we recognize especially that mankind's intentions, his heart, there's evil there, real evil. There is intentions and drives that come out of the human heart that sometimes even look beneficial on the outside, but end up leading down to the road of destruction. There's a cliche, and it's a true cliche, and that is this: the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And in many respects, I see that, yes, there's some good intentions here with transhumanism. Some fantastic medical breakthroughs, fantastic breakthroughs in other areas. At the same time, there is real potential here for some truly remarkably dangerous stuff.
Yes, and one of the things that I'm concerned about, Carl, is what I refer to as the weaponizing of transhumanism or transhumanistic technology. For example, some of the positive breakthroughs that could also be twisted and perverted for really evil intentions, somatic cell gene therapy, for example, injecting healthy gene material into patients that are suffering from various diseases. And it sounds wonderful, but just the opposite could easily be done. And I've got to think that some of that probably was during the Nazi experiments on Jewish prisoners in concentration camps during World War II. I was reading about germline therapy. This was something that was new to me, rearranging defective generic material in order to encourage healthy gene growth. Well, that's great. That's a wonderful thing. But couldn't the opposite be done too?
You know, it's interesting. This is a double-edged sword, a tremendous double-edged sword. Sometimes the big destructive side of that sword is, and it's an important area to focus on, to look at, no question about it. It needs to be acknowledged. There's also some more subtle sides to this that I find also quite troubling, because it's in the here and the now. I'll give you an example. In 2010, I went to the first Mormonist transhumanist event I'd been to. I'd been to one in 2010, and then I went back in 2013. And in 2010, I sat through some of the sessions, and there was a lot of talk of brain-computer interfacing, mind uploading, being part of the hive mentality, this type of stuff. And in the back of my mind, I'm going, yeah, well, you know, maybe down the road a little ways. There's a certain level of skepticism.
Hey? Yeah, right.
You know, right. These are big ideas. And then I went into, because this was held at the University of Utah, I went into the library, and because I love books, And I noticed that the library stacks were pretty much devoid of any students. And then I went into the commons area. And it used to be when I would go into a university commons area, common room, there would be students, there would be chat, there would be laughter, there would be pages turning. I went into the commons area, and there must have been 150, 200 people. And it was dead quiet. Completely quiet.
Wow.
What was happening? Everybody was basking in the glow of their laptops, earbuds in, texting, living the virtual hive mentality, that connection that we had just been talking about.
Yep.
Except, you know, not quite to the extreme that was being presented in the transhumanist workshops, but nevertheless, it was already happening. It was already in play. And so there's a subtle side to this where I'm asking the question, even of myself, with my own use of technology, what are the danger points in terms of my own use of these tools, tremendously beneficial tools? Yet at the same time, I'm watching a generation that is attached to this in a way that is almost like an alcoholic to his bottle.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's a good illustration, I believe, of the actual programming that's gone, the conditioning, if you will, that's gone on, and to not just introduce transhumanism, but also to open people's minds to receive it. I know you've spent a lot of time researching what are called transformational festivals.
Yes.
What exactly are those?
A transformational festival is literally a celebration of oneness. That is the best way of describing it. It is a merger of art and music, of community, of coming together for new experiences. It's part of what's known as evolutionary culture, which runs a full spectrum of anything from pagan festivals, pagan celebrations, and there's some large ones. Starwood's been around since, I believe, 83 or 82, takes place in the Midwest. There's some huge festivals that are completely concert-oriented, music-oriented, but nevertheless preach a form of oneness. Tomorrowland and Tomorrowworld are very good examples of that, which continually preach oneness. Now, what's interesting here in terms of transhumanism is that there is some dovetailing. There's a conference that takes place in Asheville, North Carolina, known as MoogFest, which is a blending of transformational evolutionary culture with developments in new technology, and by far the biggest, and not the biggest, but the best known transformational festival is Burning Man, which takes place in Northern Nevada. What's interesting with that is how Silicon Valley has rushed into it. In fact, really, Silicon Valley has been there for a long, long, long time at Burning Man, but has only in the last 10 or so years really capitalized on the social experiment that's taking place at this incredible festival. And, you know, it wouldn't have been even called a festival 15 years ago. It would have just been a party in the desert.
Right.
You know, nakedness, drugs,
yes.
Stuff up, burning stuff, and, you know, going, just doing crazy stuff.
Yes. Yeah.
But in the last 15 years, it's attached to itself a very different sense where it is, has a feeling of oneness and community and exploration. We're looking for a new reality, a new vision.
And that's an intentionally designed outcome, isn't it, Carl? Don't they?
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
And what it really, and this is important for people to realize, is the outcome is there. There's no doubt about that. The outcome is there. But the outcome is already being driven by the fact that these festivals, and there are hundreds of them, and I mean hundreds, I'm looking at going to one in 2 weeks. It's a small one, but I would like to go anyways to interact with some of the people there. Yes. What's important to understand with these festivals, and people need to really keep this in mind, is that it is simply a reflection, a mirror of where the culture already is. It's not, I don't believe these festivals are driving the culture. Rather, they are now the expression of where we are as a society.
Yes. Well, and evidence of that is that, as you've already stated, these festivals are spread out all over the world, and yet people will spend airplane fare, train fare, bus fare, all the expenses associated with traveling to, in some instances, remote destinations to participate in this. So they're investing in it financially. There's something that they're receiving from it that they want very much.
You know, I had an opportunity in February to fly to San Diego and speak at the Truth Exchange think tank conference. And I was specifically asked to come and speak on transformational festivals and evolutionary culture. And on the way there, I ended up sitting at the airport in Minneapolis waiting for my connecting flight. And it was late because of some big storms that were taking place on the East Coast. And other flights were delayed as well. So all of a sudden I had an opportunity of sitting beside a young lady, a millennial, who had a hula hoop with her. And I looked at her and just how she was dressed, and she had a professional hula hoop. It wasn't just a cheap 99-cent Walmart special, no?
Yeah.
And I looked at her and I said, "Oh, you're a flow artist." And she just piped up, "Yes, I am." And I said, "Stop right away. What transformational festivals have you been to?" And she just started listing off Joshua Tree and a bunch on the East Coast, and away she went. And we didn't have a lot of time to spend in talking about this. But I got to the chase fairly quick, and I asked her, "So, you've been to all these festivals. What's common between all the ones you've been to? Because every festival has its own flavor. Every festival has its own composition. What's common?" Oh, and she immediately responded, "Oh, it's spiritual. It's all very spiritual." I'm like, bingo, that's it. Now, the connecting point, if you're looking for a connecting point with transhumanism, because there is one, and it's the same connecting point that you're going to find in so many other areas of man looking to perfect, looking to do something with his existence that brings meaning and purpose. This is the same, regardless of how you look at it. It is the desire and the wish to create a reality of man's creation. This is man creating his reality in his own image. Whether it's transhumanism or transformational evolutionary culture.
Yes. You know, a thought that occurs to me hearing you state it that way, Carl, is that for a long time Christians have been accused, especially evangelical Christians who believe in a premillennial rapture and a return of our Lord Jesus, have been accused of being escapists. That we're not interested in interacting with the world or caring for the planet or addressing any of the concerns. We're simply interested in getting out of here as quick as we can. Now, that is an untrue assessment, of course, in my opinion. But hearing you describe transhumanism in this way makes me think that they're really the escapists. They're trying to create their own reality when God has already established what is real. And can we say, is it fair to say that one of the issues that we would have as evangelical Christians, Orthodox believers, is that transhumanism is attempting to escape the penalty of sin and rewrite the rule book. Is that accurate?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I think that would be a very honest assessment. Again, there are good motives and good intentions on some levels of this movement, especially in terms of health benefits. I'm thinking of advanced prosthesis, different things like that. But when you boil the ideology down to its core, that is what you end up seeing.
Yes, yeah. Well, Carl, let's talk about your research surrounding transhumanism and globalism. I know you've done a lot of writing, a lot of investigation into globalism. Let me phrase the question this way. Who is co-opting who? Is transhumanism co-opting the global elites, or is it the other way around? Are the global elites co-opting transhumanism? Because there seems to be a very visible, pronounced political agenda that involves transhumanism, and I'm just wondering who's leading who here.
I think up until a few years ago, it was transhumanists leading the way. And the reason I say that is because this has been pretty well stayed within the bounds of science and technology without necessarily political implications. At the same time, there's always been not politically driven, but certainly entities that are attached to politics. Some of the biggest funders have been government entities. However, the funding and the direction that they were taking, some of the transhumanist research was not necessarily to fit within the ideology of transhumanism. They were looking at other means, specifically in terms of the militarization of where some of these technologies can go. Yeah. That's there. There's been that there's no question. What is interesting is some of the early larger funders have been institutions like NASA, recognizing that this is part of man's advancement upwards and onwards, a form of technological ascension. So I would say that for the last number of years, up until fairly recently, that transhumanism has been more or less leading the way as a scientific technological ideology with its own elites, its own institutions, its own movement. But there has been a lot of interest from some of the more global players in terms of politics. That came out for me. I saw that in 2000 and I believe it was 2013 when I went to the Global Future 2045 Congress. Then that took place in early summer of 2013 in New York City, where we saw Russian cosmists. In fact, the head of the Global 2045 initiative is a cosmist, where we saw his group and about 800 or so intellectuals, people very advanced in technological institutions, MIT, Caltech was there, major academic players, Oxford was represented, where they were looking to call to the United Nations. In fact, the declaration, a letter was sent to the United Nations saying, we need some form of global governance over the transhumanist movement so that we can have future human evolution managed and directed with a global perspective. And so it would no longer be so cut up, so diverse. Let it be more international and globalist in its outcome.
From the official program of that conference, and listeners, if you're interested in this information, you can find that in Carl's Forcing Change magazine, Volume 7, Issue 6, June 2013. But the official program describes this conference this way, the Global Future 2014 International Congress, and this is a quote: "The main goals of the 2045 initiative are the creation and realization of a new strategy for the development of humanity, which meets global civilization challenges, the creation of optimal conditions promoting the spiritual enlightenment of humanity, and the realization of a new futuristic reality based on five principles: high spirituality, high culture, high ethics, high science, and high technologies. The main science megaproject of the 2045 initiative aims to create technologies enabling the transfer of an individual's personality to a more advanced non-biological carrier and extending life, including to the point of immortality. We devote particular attention to enabling the fullest possible dialogue between the world's major spiritual traditions, science, and society," end quote. You can't hardly be any more candid than that.
I know, Mike. Sitting through that event was amazing.
Did you have a recorder? I mean, because there's no way you would have been writing every word that came out of his mouth.
Yes. I try to record the various events I go to help out. It's certainly in my note taking and to better get an assessment of what's been going on, because there's a lot of stuff that gets said at these events, and that was a mouthful, but it said everything, didn't it?
Yes, it did. That was an amazing statement when I read that. Boy, they're just not hiding anything at all. So, Carl, as we wrap up our conversation for this episode, I'm wondering, as born-again believers, what can we do to push this down into the local church, into the local fellowships? How can we, and the reason I'm asking this, you already know I'm a pastor, so I have a particular interest in helping other pastors and other fellowships grasp this information. Do you have any thoughts on how we can go about pushing this down to the local fellowship level where it needs to be?
Well, one of the things is just doing what you're doing, and that is so important, and that is to communicate this information to that level, because so much of this is just simply being bypassed. This information has been viewed as kind of fringy, though the irony of it is it's been mainstream now for quite some time in entertainment. And so it's so important that we have individuals like yourself and others who are willing to take the information, whether it's my information out of Forcing Change magazine. A good example is the June 2013 edition that you just read from, printing off copies, giving it to other pastors saying, you know, hey, read this. I have some concerns with this movement. I'm seeing where this is entering the culture. I'm seeing where this is entering the community. And then let's have a talk about this, because we really need to sit down and discuss this at a serious level.
Yeah.
So I think again, it really boils down to, are you willing to speak to this at a personal level, as well as given the opportunities to a larger audience?
Yes. Carl, please share with us your research website and information for our listeners about how they can contact you.
Certainly. Our website is forcingchange.org, which is the name of our monthly magazine, Forcing Change. People have asked why the use of those words, because that's a provocative title. The bottom line is, we want to help you understand the forces that are changing our world, the forces that are changing our society, and bring this tension into play. You can find our material there. There's a number of free articles, but I would certainly recommend subscribing to our publication, because that's what helps to keep this moving forward. You can also follow on Twitter and on Facebook and connect to us that way.
Yes. And I just want to give a personal endorsement to Carl and his research and the Forcing Change website, and because I am and have been for some time a subscriber to your website, and information has been very valuable for me in my writing, and I appreciate that very much. Carl, thank you for joining me on the Soaring Eagle Radio Show today, and I hope that we can do this again real soon, and maybe just pick one subject and do a deep dive.
That'd be great, Mike. I'd really like that. Thanks for having me on your program.
You're very welcome. God bless you, Carl.
Okay, bye-bye.
Soaring Eagle Radio is a production of Transforming Word Ministries and is released under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 4.0 International License. Opening audio montage collection created by Micah 68 Productions. Visit them on the internet at www.mika68.com for more information. Friends, remember the Apostle Paul's admonition to the believers meeting in Rome. Therefore I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. I'm your host, Mike Spaulding. Thank you for joining us today for this edition of the Soaring Eagle Radio Show. God bless you.
Thanks for tuning in today to the Soaring Eagle Radio Program. For more information about the show, write us at Soaring Eagle Radio, 682 West Grand Avenue, Lima, Ohio, 45801. You may also contact Mike directly by email at the following address, Pastor Mike at woh.rr.